And we have Mallory here from Baltimore, Maryland. Please help me welcome Mallory.
Hey guys, how you doing? My name's Mallory and I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date. It is June 6th of 2008. I have a home group. It's Perry Hall Speakers Meeting in Perry Hall, Maryland. We meet on Tuesday nights at 8:30. If you're ever around, definitely come check us out. It's an amazing group. But, and I have a sponsor. And I keep in contact with my sponsor, and I've had the absolute privilege of working with people in this program and also sponsoring women. I'm nervous, so I gotta let God dig in. My job tonight is to just share with you guys in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for me now. And it's not at all what I ever thought it would be like. It's way better. And if it would have been what I thought I deserved, I would have been really selling myself short. I was born and raised in down in Orlando, Florida, to two very young parents, and they gave me absolutely anything I ever needed, and more than I could have ever wanted, but it was still never enough. I hear that here often, but it definitely holds true for me. I had about 15 months or so of being, the center of their world until my little brother came and I'd share it. And, I also have a little brother who's absolutely amazing and does not have this disease. But, so for the next, few years, my first memory as a kid, I have so many happy memories, but when I first got here, I would have told you how horrible my life was and how, my parents were, did all these bad things. My delusion was very thick. And I caused problems from the get-go. I was constantly doing anything to seek out attention. And whether it was positive attention or negative attention, I really didn't care. If their focus was on me, then that's all I really wanted. And, I acted out in schools constantly, having sit-downs with parents were having to come in and meet with my teachers, and I was put into special programs because I had attention deficit things, and in and out of psychiatrists trying to figure out what the problem was with Mallory, and just constantly on the mission to fix Mallory. And so I guess I did end up continuing to be the center of my parents' world, whether they wanted it to be like that or not. But, I picked up my first drink when I was, 14, and it wasn't one of those aha moments where, it just felt right. I mixed a whole bunch of things out of my parents' cabinets, and I didn't know any better, and the only thing that I did know is that if I drank it fast, it was going to make me feel it faster. So I had this Zephyr water bottle filled with anything that I found in the cabinet, and in about a 2 mile radius from my house to the gates at the end of my neighborhood, I just chugged it. And I remember throwing the bottle out on the side of the road, and then we were going to this hotel party, and I woke up in the hospital covered in charcoal, and because they had to pump my stomach, later to find out that I was dropped off at my parents' doorstep by this boy, and I was not responsive. I had to get a shot to make my heartbeat start going again, and I had alcohol poisoning, and I was talking about a guy in a red hat who had taken me into some back room. And when that kind of stuff happens with a girl and those, in that condition, there are certain things that have to take place at a hospital. And so I woke up to my parents just freaking out, and I didn't know what was going on, and I had no answers to the questions that I was being asked, and I just knew that, this is not what I wanted the night to be like. And my consequences for that were not that severe, but it scared the crap out of me, so I stopped drinking for about 4 years, and I became this little Nazi around my friends. If they wanted to, I wouldn't allow them to drink. I didn't allow them to drink, but if they did, I'd judge them. And I didn't really do anything else but just act out with behavior things. And I started picking up like a certain amount of my alcoholism to come out in different ways, because I believe that, you know, I have a disease of alcoholism, and that doesn't mean that I drink, like, and that's just the only problem. Like, that means that whether it's, like, people, food, sexual things, you know, money, property, whatever this thing is, whatever it is that looks bright and shiny and then it looks like it's going to fix me, or if it's going to kind of like make things feel better or make me look better, that's what I'm going to try to fill it up with. And I'm going to keep trying with more and more of it until I realize it's not working, and then I go to the next thing. And it's because I've got this spiritual malady inside of me that's just this gaping hole, and I try to fill it with anything. And what I don't realize is that it's a spiritual experience, and it's, you know, tapping into a power that's greater than me that's going to fix this. And so I was like on a quest to just fill this hole inside of me. And I picked up a drink again, like probably when I was around like 18. And it was just, you know, from there, it was pretty sure it was like the next like 3 years I was going to end up finding myself doing different types of substances and, you know, lots of drinking and just finding, doing things that people should, you know, nobody should be putting themselves in those kind of situations, and nobody deserves to be doing, like, should be doing those things. And so I pretty much just drank for the next 3 years. To fast forward to the end, like, you know, I found myself waking up, and my friends were pretty, like, they seemed okay with it because they allowed me to use the excuse that I was, like, in a bad spot and I was going through a breakup, so they let me just do what I needed to do, you know, for a period of time, until they realized that I was, like, staying on the couch for, like, a week on end and not getting up. I was literally waking up to, like, drinking, passing out, coming to, putting more in my system and passing out again. Like, I just didn't want to be alive, and I couldn't understand why I kept coming, like, coming back. You know, like waking back up. And so my friend stepped in and got a hold of my parents and let them know like what was really going on. So my dad has always been the type of, he's always been like the one who saved me. And when Mallory was ran her life into the ground, my dad stepped in and like swept me away and like kind of saved the day. And my dad did it again this time, but you know, this is too powerful for a person to save us from, because, you know, like they say, if love could have got, like, I'm paraphrasing, but if love, you know, like, the love could have gotten me sober, then I would have been. But it couldn't. And so basically what ended up happening is I found myself detoxing on my dad's couch for the next few weeks, and whatever type of alcohol I could possibly get a hold of, and whether that was mouthwash, Purell, whatever, I was putting into my system, because I didn't realize that I was going, like, I had this physical, like, dependency upon alcohol. I didn't understand. I thought I was food poisoning for the longest time. But I wasn't. No, really, like, I wasn't eating. I was just drinking, but I was getting food poisoning. I don't know. But I wouldn't understand why I would be, like, sweating, and then my legs were restless, and I was, like, shaking all the time. And, but I did know that if I put that drink inside of me, that it was going to stop. And, you know, so I kind of just did that, and I did whatever I could whenever I could at that point. I was shipped off to my first rehab. You know, I was told I was going to the beach for a few days in the pack for that. So I put all my pretty little bikinis and stuff into a bag, and Mom dropped me off at Focus by the Sea. I spent my 21st birthday in there, and got out that night, and Mom and I celebrated that I now knew how to drink. And it wasn't more than 24 hours or like 48 hours that I was coming at my mom, like trying to like physically attack my mom. And my parents were like divorced by this time, and she was like in a new relationship in a different state. But I skipped a lot. But so basically I just came through, and in like 48 hours just ran that tornado through my mom's life. And I had to go. You know, it was, my mom was given an ultimatum, and it was kind of, you know, like, she can't stay here. You know, this is our house, this is our home, and this, I'm just not taking this. So my mom went out, got me a car, handed me $100, and told me she didn't want me in her life anymore. So So I got in my car and I drove down to Florida where I thought all my friends would want to see me. They hadn't seen me in 6 years because my family, like, moved. But, so I drove down to Florida, and for the next 30 days, I lived out of my car. I ran around doing God knows what. But, it was, you know, I would, like, walk into the grocery store and, like, stuff a bunch of bottles of wine into my bag and then, like, run out in the car and put them in a 7-Eleven cup and just, like, chug it and pass out. And that's what my life was for, like, 30 days. And I would do this, like, you know, I was always doing this, like, MIA thing. Like, I would, like, turn my phone off for 4 days and no one would know where Molly was. And I can't even, you know, I still can't even imagine what that does to parents today. Like, and I just thought they were bugging me, you know? Like, God, can you please just stop calling me? I'm fine. Leave me alone. And so I was pulling another one of those tricks, and my dad is amazing. He has a way to figure out anything, and he always has an answer to so many things. He's amazing. So my dad put this little thing called GPS on my phone, and when I ignored his call because I touched the button and activated whatever, it just showed that I was basically messing with the service. Had I let it go to voicemail, I'd been fine. But and because it did, it popped up on GPS, and it just so happened, like, you know, one of those God shots. Like, God was so working in my life, even if I couldn't see it. And so when it activated, it gives up these coordinates where you're at, and my dad calls. Somehow I ended up in Jacksonville, Florida. My dad calls the state troopers, and there happens to be three of them at the 7-Eleven across the street. And so they go over, and they start looking for me. Well, the problem is that in this corner, there's an abandoned field with a building in it that's just, like, huge, right? Like, just this old, rundown building, and then there's the apartment complex where Mallory really was. And so the state troopers for about 2.5 hours running around this abandoned building in this field, like, trying to find me. And then on the phone with my dad the whole time, telling them that, you know, like, it's not looking good. Like, this is not a place where they had hopes. And basically, like, the best part, like, the highest hope they had was that someone just tossed my phone there, you know? And God knows what was going through my dad's mind at that point. I later found out. But, so a little bit later, I'm outside walking the dog, and I come to, and I see these cops looking in my car, and I'm just like, crap, what did I do last night? Like, they're driving, like, why are they looking in my car? And I went downstairs, and the state trooper was like, do you know whose car this is? And I informed him it was mine, and he told me he had someone who needed to talk to me, and he hands me the phone, and it's my dad. And I can't understand a word that he's saying. I just know that he's crying, and he's telling me that I'm killing him. And, it takes a lot for us to realize we're affecting other people, doesn't it? You know, like, it takes that severity and that thing coming from my dad's mouth to that, God, you know, like, wow, maybe this isn't just me giving it to the man, you know? Like, maybe I really am, like, affecting other people in my life. And, you know, thank God I had that another thing of willingness, and I was just like, okay, I'll do whatever. And I went into treatment for the next 3 months. And I couldn't even stay sober in an inpatient treatment. I was drinking hand sanitizer. Like, you know, and I continued that kind of crap for the next, like, 6 months. And I found myself playing another geographic in Bel Air, Maryland. I was told it was a safe town. Nobody did anything there. So I thought, of course, I'll stay sober there. So I packed my little bag, and I went to Bel Air, Maryland. And what ended up happening was, I realized, like, okay, for whatever reason, it just kind of dawned on me one morning when I woke up. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do this. Like, this is going to be the exact same for the rest of my life, no matter where I go, no matter what I do. And I had been around LA a little bit to see God working in each and every one of you guys, but I never gave it a chance, or could I see that it was even possible that he would start working in mine. So, I called Intergroup, and they got me in touch with a woman who called me right back, and I was so surprised, you know? I was like, why is she calling me? She cares. And they came to pick me up and started taking me to meetings. And, you know, I started coming around, and I started being more accountable, like, just to other people, just kind of being there. The only consistency I had at that point was coming to the meetings every day. And I was still doing my own thing, like not, I was working my own program and that involved not staying sober, you know, like it was going to a CVS and coming home with mouthwash and passing out on my floor in my living room, like, one night I, sitting outside of my porch, and the whole God thing for me was kind of, I was raised Catholic, so I was pretty convinced that, you know, I had committed enough crap in my life that God did not have room to work with a horrible human being with me, like me, and that, you know, I was long past that kind of, like, redemption and forgiving and things like that. And so I'm sitting on my porch, and I'm looking outside at the stars, and I was just like, all right, I know that I've got nothing to do with these stars, and that there's absolutely no way that I have anything to do with this stuff that's going on around me. So there's got to be some sort of God, and there's got to be a way, if he can do this, that he can help me if I really try. So I called my sponsor, and I told her what was going on, because I did have a sponsor, and I was honest with her, and I told her exactly what it was that I was doing, and for whatever reason, that was the night of my last drink. And so I started, you know, I knew that I was dying from this disease. And I had been sober for a couple of weeks here and there to see that if I'm not drinking, like, you know, it's still bad and I always pick up. So I knew that I had to really, like, get into this thing. So I launched into the steps and I started I worked the steps, like, very early on, and I did it. How she did it with me, how she was done with her sponsor, and I started doing the work, and I started to see these things, like, I started to see my life changing, and it was, even if I didn't believe it was really going to, like, it started to change because I was putting the work in, and I started seeing people at meetings that were being, like, consistent, and that had this, like, shine in their eye that I didn't know what it was. I just knew that I wanted mine to do that too. And, you know, and I started, like, really just listening for the first time in my life and trying to, you know, be a person who's adding to, like, other people's lives as opposed to constantly taking. And I started taking simple direction, which is not a strong point of mine, you know. And so I stayed up in Bel Air for about a year or so, and I developed an absolutely just amazing network in Alcoholics Anonymous. Of, like, you know, I thought my life was over when I came to AA, and that I'm 21 years old and I'm going to be sober. Like, how am I going to do the rest of my life like this? And what ended up happening is I started, like, meeting people, making these memories, and, like, being involved in these things that were so just absolutely amazing, you know, like, you know, early on in sobriety, they did that, like, when I first got sober, like, early on, they did this huge trip that they go down to the shore every year, and the girl who was, like, hosting it, I never met her, I didn't know her, but I saw her, and she came up to me, and she invited me to this trip, where it's, like, everyone's going to have fun, and I couldn't understand why she didn't know me, didn't want anything from me, and why would she invite me to this place, and what ended up happening was I was able to be around ton of young people who are in the solution and who are explaining to me how to do this. And, like, starting to build a network where if something happened and I didn't know how to handle a situation, I could pick up my phone and call someone and ask for help. Started being able to ask for help. Started to be able to be accountable to my family and to be able to show up when I said that I was going to. You know, like, those little things is how I started. My whole life has been lying, you know, like, and snowball lying. Like, I would start off with the smallest thing, and then I would have to lie to keep that one going, and then lie to keep that going, and then building, and just a mess. And I started being able to tell the truth. And, you know, and if I did find myself lying, I would, one of the ways I got past that is I started calling myself out on it and be like, I don't know why I'm lying to you right now, but I am. And I was told that I need to tell you that, you know? And, I was taught how to be, like, you guys started to show me how to be, a decent human being. And, you know, how to come around here and be, like, a productive member of society. Like, all of these little things that my parents tried so hard to show me that I never got. I was being taught by you guys. And, you know, so I started working early on with, like, after I worked the steps that God was put into my life, that, you know, after my help, so I had my first experience with working with a new person, and, you know, it's kind of one of the lessons I learned early on is that we can't save people, you know, like, we're given a message, and we're, like, we're born, we don't realize it, but we're, like, born with this gift to save lives, that, like, you know, it even says all the doctors and all of the, you know, colleges and psychologists, like, all of these people would die to have this gift, and when we sit down, like, I have a friend who just says, like, something just ignites between the two of us, and we understand each other, and we connect, it's because we've suffered, and we feel that thing inside of us, and, you know, like, I was able to, you know, that meant, like, my job with that is, like, I have to be able to, like, pass this on and not worry about, like, you know, if I'm just planting a seed or if I'm able to be, like, the one, you know, who is able to put your hand in God, you know? So I started working with this girl, and I learned so much from this person, like, early on, and, I don't really know where I was going with that. But, anyway, so I started working with her, and I started feeling, you know, like, that's when I kind of felt like I'd actually really become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, is when I had been able to sit down with someone else and then start to share this with them. And, so, anyways, I'm, like, kind of lost. But, so, let's see what else. I don't know, I really just... I don't know, I recently, you know, like, throughout, oh, thank you. Okay. You know, throughout this thing, it's been a lot of, you know, I'm still really early on, I'm still learning about all this, and what I realized is that, you know, that whole alcohol thing, like, that was one of my solutions, and, I've used plenty of different things to be a solution for me, and once I cut the alcohol out of my life, like, I realized my life had kind of gotten at the point where it was, like, even more unmanageable than when I was drinking, you know, like, equally, and I started, you know, seeing my alcoholism come out in different ways, and I made a lot of changes right around the year of sobriety, and I backed off a little bit from AA. And so I found myself celebrating a year of sobriety where I should have, you know, I was proud of my, like, I was proud of myself, and I was, you know, grateful and excited about it all, but I was in such, like, a bad spot where I had stopped being grateful, and I had cut back on what I was doing and the work that I was putting in AA, and I started focusing more on, like, moving forward in my life with work, and I was beating myself up that I was, you know, not in school and, like, all this stuff. So I got my priorities mixed up, and what I realized is, like, AA is not a priority for me. Like, AA is a must for me. Like, everything below Alcoholics Anonymous and my recovery is a priority. And that's where I need, you know, that's where things can be moved around. But that and God need to always stay above everything else. And I wasn't practicing that at that point. So I had reached, I don't have a very high pain threshold. So I reached a lot of pain really quick. And, you know, I had found out around that time that the woman who was sponsoring me had decided to make her own changes to go in a different direction in this program. And I felt myself lost, because what it was is that I started to try to build this relationship with God and with a power greater than me. But what I did was I built it alongside of someone else's. And I didn't develop my own. I developed their conception of a higher power, and I applied it into my life and tried to tap into that, as opposed to opening my heart up and making my, you know, creating my own higher power. And so when I got into an amount of pain that I really needed to tap into my God, I couldn't get to it. And so what ended up happening was, once again, I realized, you know, like, how powerful this is and how this disease can come at me in so many different ways. And it is. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know, like, it'll just sneak up on me, and my disease wants me alone and dead. I heard someone say that my disease is doing push-ups as I'm sitting in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, it's outside doing push-ups, getting stronger. And, you know, and that disease wants me to be alone and to be, you know, sad and, you know, ultimately dead. And so I started, you know, first off, I reached my hand out and I started asking for help again. And I started being honest about what was going on in my life and that I was, like, in a bad spot. And I ended up getting myself into a network of people again, like, kind of just, like, being taken under the wing of AA and being shown this thing again and going through my steps again. So, like, I just recently been going through them again with my new sponsor. And, you know, the whole spiritual malady thing was explained to me in a different perspective, kind of like one that I guess my ears are open to this time. And about how, you know, that this thing is like, it's all about principles, you know, like whether or not we believe in these principles, like they're going to apply to our lives. And that I heard someone say it's about, you know, kind of like if we're standing on a building and it's like gravity. If we believe in gravity or not, if we jump off of that building, we're still going to hit the ground. Like, it just, that's just how it is. And that's the same way that this stuff works. Like, you know, if we're doing this, like, it works. I don't know. It works in our life. I don't know if I'm going to be able to fill an hour up. Sorry. I just feel like I'm everywhere. You know, one of the gifts that this has given me is, like, being able to, like, want to do things and be able to actually follow through with them when I say I want to do them and do them. And that's kind of what we did this weekend. There was an Acts of Recovery up in Boston, and I've been wanting to go to an Acts of Recovery. And there was a group of people that I knew, like my sponsor and some other friends were going up. So we ended up booking a ticket, and, like, I actually went. And we went up to Boston this weekend, and we went on Thursday, and we came back early this morning, and it was just, like, absolutely amazing, like, to be able to be around so many people of so many different types, and when we all come together, and, like, it's just, you know, we're all the same, and none of us are really unique, and none of us are different than the other. We all just, you know, have this primary purpose, and we're all going about it and doing it. Like, we're all walking alongside of God, like, doing God's work. And, you know, I was talking to a girl that I'm working with right now last night, and I kind of think that that's maybe where we get, you know, and I think for me, that's where I get kind of irritable, is that I know that I've got this solution, and I know that I know the answer to save, you know, sick and suffering alcoholics, like, and all I gotta do is pass it along. And when I pull myself away from this program and I'm not passing it along, that's probably what is so horrible, is I'm being so selfish, and I know that I'm keeping this secret to myself and I'm not sharing it. And I think that that's why it's, you know, so important that we are sharing it with people, is because, like, you know, to be up here and to have a solution to something that might save your life and to not share it with you is probably the most selfish thing that I could ever do. And, you know, the solution is in the Big Book, and the solution is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, and whether I believe in it or not, if I start to put my feet, you know, if I start to move my feet and put in the action and do it, is suggested to me and what is outlined in this book, that my life changes for the good either way. And, you know, this weekend in Boston, it was absolutely amazing to be able to see all these people come together and to share stories and to share experiences and to be able to see how people got through certain things in their life and how, you know, just to be able to sit around and share things with people, you know, make new friends and lasting friendships, you know, like healthy, nourishing friendships. And all the while, like, being of service to AA, like, we had a great time up there, but at the same time, you know, we were doing what we needed to do also. And, you know, but I don't know, I guess, I'm so scattered still just because it's probably just a day. But it's absolutely amazing to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous and to have recovery in my life and to be able to apply. I'm not always perfect at it. I'm still working right now. I'm working on the 10th and 11th step. I'm making a conscious effort to do my 10th step at night. And, applying the meditation into my life to take 30 minutes in the morning and get up early as opposed to sleeping in and actually do it or do it before I go to bed. And, and to just continue to do what I need to do on a daily basis to, maintain this. And, if I get up in the morning and I hit my knees and I ask God to remove me from me and to allow me to show up to do His work today, whichever way He sees fit, And when I was in the bathroom before this, I was like, if you want me to look like an idiot tonight, then I'll look like an idiot. But please no. But it's kind of amazing to be able to wake up in the morning and pray. And to, that in itself is amazing, but to be able to have a primary purpose today. And to know that my job, I have a purpose in life today, and my purpose is, to help another alcoholic and to continue to do God's work. And my sponsor always says, our job is to nudge our brothers and sisters in the direction of God, and if we can't, just don't hurt them, at least don't hurt them. And I can say that I do that to the best of my ability today. And for me to at least say that is huge. That's paramount compared to what I was when I came in here. Because, like I said, when I came in here, I was probably some of the people might be in here. And I was just running through people's lives, and I really didn't care if I was hurting you or not. And, or if I, what I was doing. And to be able to come in here with, to be able to actually have enough love for you and not even know you and just want to be able to, share with you what I have and to let you know that, no one told you to know that they love you like I do, and I mean it. It's amazing. I really think, I don't know, it's like...
Mind me asking, how have you worked through your steps? You said so much about
your experience,
strength, and help with your
family.
Where are you with that today?
That's a good question. for whatever reason, absolutely hated my dad when I was a kid, and my perception of that was seeing my mom always crying, and I thought that it was his fault, and the stuff that was going on in my family, I always blamed my dad, because that was just kind of the easy outlet, and I had no relationship with my brother, and my relationship with my mom wasn't good. I had no relationship with my grandparents or cousins or any of that stuff, because they're all up in Allentown, and my whole family's down south. And, there's reasons why you were removed from that. But, where I'm at with that today, before I came here, I went and had dinner with my Nana and Pappy. And, I make it a point to be with them whenever I can. They stood by me the whole time, and I didn't see it. I didn't realize it. I just thought that I was too sick to recognize that it was unconditional love. I really just thought that they were trying to hurt me and that they didn't care, that they were trying to control me. But, like I said about my dad was always a saving person. And my dad calls me for advice or my opinion on things today, which is still amazes me. My little brother's in college at Clemson, and he'll call me up when things are going wrong, and just little things. He's very, very quiet and very isolated, exactly different than opposite of me. And he'll call me because he doesn't get along with roommates, and they'll just want to talk for like 30 minutes. My brother's not even a talker, you know, and I don't know, I've got an amazing relationship with my family today, and I never thought that that was possible, like, at all. And like, when I made amends to my dad, my dad told me, well, first off, we go in there and we don't cause any further harm. So there was a lot of stuff, a lot of the harm I had caused was calling my dad up when I was using and drinking and stuff, and complaining about what was going on in my life and like asking for help and basically telling him things that I really shouldn't have been, because I was just hurting him further. And so a lot of my a lot of my relationship with my dad today is just kind of calling him to see how he's doing and to see what he did this week and to see what's new in his world and not talking about me all the time, because he was consumed with me, like, for my whole life. You know, like, he always had to deal with the problems now he was causing. And, that's kind of where it's at. And, like, when I made amends with my dad, it was amazing. That was, like, the first amends that I had made. And, when I went to him with it, like, I owed him money. So, we don't go empty-handed. So, I went to my dad with money, and he turned it away. And so, I was directed to tell him to donate it or give it to a good cause, do something with it, because it wasn't mine. And, I went to my dad with that, and then I was able to sit down and talk to my dad. And one of the things, this is interesting, I later found out what that was like for him to experience that situation with the phone. My dad sat me down, and he wanted me to know what had happened for him that day. And so my dad told me in detail what it was like to be on the other side of the phone looking at this grid on the computer and thinking that they're going to find his daughter's body and like what he went through with that. And then he asked me to ask my stepmom what it was like for her. And that, when my stepmom told me, my dad's not an emotional person. And when she said she walked in the doors from work that day, and like my dad was at the computer, and she went up to him, she didn't know what was going on, he was on the phone. And he just kind of, like, claps out of the chair, and then I'm just crying. And, like, to imagine my dad doing that, like, I hope I never, ever forget that, like, an image of that, because that's just, I can't even put words to that, you know, like, the kind of pain. But, so my life today is about making those things right. But,
you don't mind me asking, what would you tell a newcomer?
What would I tell a newcomer? I think probably, well, I know they say it all the time, to keep coming back, but, like, for me, like, at the beginning, that's the one thing I did right, was to keep coming back. And, that they're loved, you know, that the people here, like, all we want to do is to be able to help you and to put your hand into God's, you know, and, like, I guess essentially what I would tell a newcomer is to just give it a try. Like, you know, if this is, what do you have to lose if you give it a try? And you really go about this and you get, you know, use all of your human power to try this and put the rest of your faith into God's and to go, you know, about this honestly and fearlessly. Like, you've got nothing to lose. And if you do, like, if you think this doesn't work for you, then you can make a decision later. But, you know, I don't know.
How long you been sober?
I've been sober like a year and 4 months, 5 months. Amends of God stories. I really can't think of one. I mean, like, off the top of my head. Oh, that's something I never thought I'd be able to do. One of my amends, I totally skipped that part. When I left my mom's house that day and I got in the car and drove down to Florida, I got into 2 hit and runs in 48 hours. How did I skip that? my life was so manageable. I got into 2 hit and runs down off 95 going to Florida, and I didn't have proof of insurance, a license. I didn't have a license plate on the car. I had no proof that the car was mine. Nothing. And the cops wrote me a hand, like a stack of tickets for the one, and let me go. Not to mention, I drank an entire fifth of Stoli Blueberry. And they wrote me a stack of tickets and sent me on my way. The next day, like the next morning, I was going to get more stuff and did the same thing. Got me another accident. I just happened to make a U-turn and come back this time and got all the tickets. And not remembering any of this stuff, I we clear up the wreckage of our past. And so a huge part of that was going back and handling this on my legal stuff. So a couple of months ago, working alongside of a bail bondsman and, a lawyer and stuff, I flew back down to Florida and turned myself in. And it was just amazing. I get to jail and I was so scared. But like I knew it was going to be fine and I knew that it was going to work out. And I walked in there with God. Like I knew that I was doing the right thing and I was taken care of. And I get in there and there's a 16-year-old girl who's detoxing. And I was able to sit with her for 6 hours and just kind of talk to her about this stuff. And I didn't even think once about me, you know? I didn't think that I was sitting in a jail cell. I just thought, oh my God, thank you for putting this girl here, you know? And that's how God works through my life today. Like, He's constantly popping in and out of people like you guys. And it's amazing. And I heard someone say that something that Mother Teresa had said, and I just love this, and I tried to do it, he had a chance to meet Mother Teresa, and he asked her what the hardest thing she had, most difficult thing she'd ever had to do was. And she said that it was to see God in its most disgusting disguises. And, and that doesn't just mean, like, I don't know. I guess that just means to me, like, I need to look for God in everything, because God, to me, is everything. And if I am going to work and I'm looking around the city of Baltimore and looking for God in the city rather than, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to work, my days are like so much better. You know, if I'm walking around trying to be conscious of God and maintaining that, then everything is so much brighter and more beautiful and, it goes more smoothly. And, I guess, I don't know, I'm trying to, I feel like...
No, this is no pressure.
I know.
The cops will keep going.
Okay. Well, I think I'm done.